Video games.
Yeah, there was an article on Gama Sutra today where Lee Alexander interviewed Ian Bogost.
Yeah.
About, did you guys see this?
About Cow Clicker?
Is it pronounced Bogost?
Yeah, Ian, I think it is Ian Bogost.
I thought it would be Bogost, but.
Maybe it is.
It's Bogost.
Bogost with
B-apostrophe G-S-O-S-T. See, that is actually also a casual game.
G-O-H-S-T.
Oshkosh Bogost. Ian.
What? So, Cow Clicker.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I thought that was a cool.
I read about half of that Cow Clicker thing. Like, what? Where did it end up? Like, why would people be pissed off about that? Like, that seemed to be the
people are pissed off because it's satire that also actually takes people's money in the same way as a social game, right?
I mean, I don't think he actually. I don't think he does it take people's money.
I think you invest money.
You can pay money to be able to click your cow more than once every 6 hours.
Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, I think a lot of people clearly ended up playing it just because. It, at least to some extent, works on some of the same level that a social game does. I mean, it doesn't have millions and millions of people like Farmville, but the idea is what you're basically doing is just empty, repetitive action that rewards you with just bullshit feedback.
Yeah.
And you can pay things to get like an imaginary advantage.
Yeah, but I mean, like, why are people pissed off about it?
I don't know if...
Well, it just seems like a really, really transparent version of exactly what Farmville is. So do people feel like it's exploitative or something in some way that those other games aren't?
I don't really know much about the background of it, but I mean, if people are pissed off, I imagine it's because he is fairly obviously making a negative statement about social games with that.
Right, and pocketing the money from it.
I mean, I don't think I think he said it's not making tons of money.
But it's still
dollar
bills.
He's definitely doing a thing that people are actually... at least some people are playing earnestly, whereas to him it's just like this hilarious joke.
Yeah,
which it is.
Which seems totally valid to me. I mean, like,
it is totally valid. I think it's great. I think it's awesome. Maybe
so. Yeah, I don't know. I just read part of the article. I didn't read the whole thing, like I said, but it seemed it kept implying that there was some sort of outrage about it, but never really said from who or in what context.
Blog posts / essay things about it, and generally that's what it is. Of when do you draw the line at it being satire? If money is flowing in the exact same legitimate, like, well, the money isn't being collected ironically, it's actually just being collected through the Facebook payment system.
Yeah, but successful satire to some extent.
Yeah, it feels to me like, you know, making a satirical summer blockbuster movie that's about how those movies are the stupidest things and then making millions of dollars off of it. Like, I don't know. Okay, make millions of dollars off of the audience that you're sort of ridiculing. I think that's fine. I mean, that's sort of the point of that. That shows that the satire is a success, I think, if it can actually appeal to the people that.
I agree. I understand also why some people are rubbed the wrong way by it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's down to intent, basically. I mean, I think the reason they're rubbed the wrong way is specifically because this exists as a you know, implicit critique of social games. And I think that. Just like, I mean, you know, for whatever reason, everything surrounding games, people seem to be very protective of. I mean, certainly gamers are very protective of their games when any mainstream news outlet comes and says anything about them. Yeah. And then I think social game developers are very protective of what they're doing as being this very valuable. Like, that was something that Bogost addressed in the article, which I totally agree with. It does seem like social game developers seem to feel like they're doing the world more of a service than other game developers are. I don't know if you guys have gotten that.
Because so many people play it or something?
Yeah, but sure. Do you know, I mean, surely you've seen that attitude I'm talking about. Like, I mean, almost every social everything.
Only because I don't pay attention to it, I haven't. Sure, but I take your word.
Do you know what I mean, Jake?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it seems to be, to me, an attitude that is present across all things that include the word social on the internet. You know, like social network stuff. Like, whenever those guys do press conferences, it's
connecting
always
people.
Yeah, it's this magnanimous, like, we are pushing humanity forward.
Yeah, yeah. Twitter definitely thinks that they're the thing that is the best for humanity ever. And so,
But I mean, Twitter's also at least a, like, really important service.
Right.
Like, there are dudes who just every day launch the most bullshit social networks that are just like, oh, great, I know this because I get press releases from them every day.
And they all have that tone of, we're also making everything more open and better for humanity.
Yeah, and so
social games also kind of
pick that up? And a big part of it is because they operate on the assumption that, okay, well, we are expanding the audience, more people are playing games, which is not a bad thing. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
But to equate that inherently with quality is preposterous. You would never say that about anything. I mean, everyone went to see fucking Scary Movie 8. Yeah. These people are doing a great service for humanity. Look how many people went and saw that movie. Like, who fucking cares?
Right. I mean, because that's the thing. That's the way it seems to me, is that, like, Bogost making money off of this is, like, no more cynical than the people that are doing it completely.
Earnestly, right.
Sincerely, yeah. It just, the whole enterprise just seems really like a cynical money
mover,
you know, to me. Yeah. But, I don't know. I think that's a, I don't know. And it was interesting to me because I actually heard about or seen some like references to cow clicker prior to this. And
you
I
saw
just,
your friend on Facebook had clicked a cow.
I think that might actually be the case. And then I did the thing where it's like hide all updates from cow clicker. and I just thought it was some other social game. Yeah. And then it's like a satirical version. Because
they're
of it.
All, most of them are that vapid.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so
like,
it's like
there was the thing being named cow clicker did not. Set off any warning bells for me.
You know, it's hilarious. I completely coincidentally ran into, through a post on by someone on the Idle Thumbs forums, the guys who make Neptune's Pride. I guess they've announced their new project, which is another strategy
which is,
game, but it's different.
Spaceship clicker.
Samuel L. Jackson's arm.
Oh man, no, but they apparently also like. In their spare time, or like, what? I guess they dedicate some amount of time to making iPhone and iPad games. And they have two so far. And one of them is called Kitty Tapper HD. And the other one is called like Grave Tapper HD. And what they seem to be doing is they've got these games that they actually give a shit about, which are Neptune's Pride and whatever they're working on now, which are these like interesting emergent strategy games.
Yeah.
And then they're also just like, well, it seems like people will pay $4 to click on a cat on a phone. So is there any reason we shouldn't get those dollars? Which, as far as I'm concerned, fucking go for it. Like, these guys are doing something that I actually do care about for real. So if the way they partially finance that
is
by...
So what is a kitty tapper? It sounds horrible.
It's just like pictures of kittens and
kitty.
Oh, okay.
Press them and there's like a timer. Oh, you thought I said kitty, like child?
Yeah. That's what I thought as well until you said a cat later. I was like, kitty, man. Not touch this boy on your phone.
Yeah, it sounded way worse to me. I was like, whoa, they're going edgy with this whole satirizing.
I contracted them to do the iPhone version of Milo. So they're working on that right now. Mm.
Creepy.
Peter Molyneux is heavily involved.
So,
very heavy.
Yeah.
Handed petting. Kitties. Tees with tees.
It's high definition.
You guys?
Yes?
It's July 31st, 2010.
Oh.
And there is time for clacks.
Steve Gaynor.
And we're going to keep talking now, I guess. This is Idle Thumbs episode 11. The Idle Thumbs podcast episode 11.
Sup, dudes.
Hey.
Welcome to pods.
Yeah. We were talking for a while there.
Thanks for joining me on a pod. I'm riding a pod through the internet now, and you two are joining me.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're wingman on this pod.
Uh-huh. I'm a pod surfer.
Sweet. Well, since you're in charge of this pod, what do you want to talk about?
Ooh. Video games?
Okay, video games.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to talk about them.
Oh, I was going to say really quick.
Yeah, yeah.
You had that kill screen shirt on last episode, which Sean made fun of by calling it the a shirt using the same font as Scream.
Which I didn't recognize, but I'll take his word for it.
I thought that was hilarious, but I got the first two issues of Kill Screen.
Oh, nice.
Oh, cool. There's already two?
Yeah, there's issue zero and issue one. I haven't
one
actually read them yet,
now.
But the cover of issue zero says video games, video games, video games on it, which I was really pleased about until I realized that they didn't put the space in.
Nope.
One word, so they're idiots. And then I burned those magazines.
Yep. It was like, I looked on, I don't know, it's either on their website or on one of their writers on Twitter said that they make it one word unless they forget and miss something in copy editing, and then it has a space, which I disagree with.
I also disagree with that. And it should go to
hell. Yeah, the Idle Thumbs stance is video games is two words.
Yeah. Questions@idlethumbs.net. Do you put a space or not?
That's not a thing we'll read ever on the email.
The answer is there is a space.
I know there is. So write in to say there's a space. If you don't think there is one,
then don't write in.
Yeah, stay the fuck off our domain.
We just want emails that agree with us on this point. Yes. We don't want to have to challenge
our beliefs. We want to see how many people agree with us. That's our only interest.
So what's up in the world of video space games?
Video games. Well, we should probably just to follow up the kill screen thing just for people who haven't heard of it. Like, Idle Thumbs readers would probably be interested in it. You know?
I think so.
It's almost... It doesn't have a regular schedule, but it's kind of quarterly, I think. And it's this nice... nicely produced color magazine by a number of like game critics and bloggers and writers for various publications like the Onion AV Club and Paste and et cetera. And it's just like a bunch of game criticism and editorial articles that they put out that are sort of the thinking man's games journalism, you know, and it has just a really nice approach to copy editing and all that kind of sort of the graphic design of it. So go to killscreenmagazine.com if you're interested in good writing about video games.
Yes.
Jake has episodes.
I have both of the
magazine, I think is what they call them.
Yeah, I've got episodes 0 and 1.
Yeah.
I haven't looked at them yet.
I guess my episode 1 is either on the way or like sitting on my desk at work because it's delivered there, but I haven't been there. I'm looking forward to reading it.
Sweet.
What else has been going on in the world of playing video games, not reading about them?
I've been playing StarCraft 2.
Oh, did that come out?
It did. It came out. You may have noticed.
Yeah, I think I heard about that StarCraft game.
It's a game. You can play it now. It's really good.
Done. What's next?
I wish I'd gotten farther in it. I've only played.
You haven't caught up with your StarCraft ghost from BlizzCon.
Exactly. Well, from Blizzard. Yeah. Actually, the mission that I was playing
Are you talking about like the top ghost?
Yeah, I'm talking about Chris. Ghost? Chris is racing against his ghost from his previous playthrough. but in this case, it's a StarCraft ghost.
So you played further through this at Blizzard then.
Well, as of today, that is no longer the case. The mission I was playing when you guys got in, I'd never seen that mission before.
Oh, okay. That was where you were playing an invisible Jamaican guy.
Yes, I was playing a Spectre, which is
an invisible Rastafarian.
New version of the ghost from StarCraft 1. Yeah, also the Jamaican.
Seemed that way.
Yeah.
He sometimes sounds like Duke Nukem.
To Jake.
To me.
It's a good game, though. I'm really enjoying it.
So you've been playing mostly the single player since the retail game.
I've just been playing. I want to play through the actual campaign.
So you
first.
And Nick haven't just leapt right into co-op
I logged into StarCraft today, and because you know Blizzard's little notification friend thing is cross game, or you know, as they release games,
and
it will
like
be.
So Nick
right
Bracken
now,
is playing WoW.
Yeah, he
what?
Was.
What he is?
Yes.
No, what a fool!
I saw that.
It was ridiculous.
Twitter.
Yeah, I sent him a message, and I'm like, wrong game, asshole. I guess he's playing with other people from Bethesda.
Is
Softworks.
Yeah.
Is the Cataclysm stuff out or
The Cataclysm stuff is out in beta. I actually have I played a bit of the beta recently. And it made me wonder why I used to play this game. although I've heard the Worgen starting area is cooler than some of the other stuff, so I might go back and try that.
The what starting
sort of
area?
Creature?
It's like I think it's like a wolfman. Yeah.
Like a wolf.
Yeah. But StarCraft 2 is really, really, really good.
Is there an FMV of that creature howling, silhouetted by a giant moon?
Maybe there's probably a shirt of that.
That's good.
Yeah.
What's the
three of them howling?
The class name or
the race is Worgen.
Yeah, so there should be a 3 Worgen moon shirt. I'm sure that exists.
At least a paint shop or a Photoshop of it.
At least a paint shop pro
cracked demo version of it. Yes.
Yeah.
So what's cool about StarCraft 2? Like I've read stuff about the campaign that makes it sound like it might be interesting for someone that isn't a big RTS person. Do you think that could be true?
I think that is probably the case, mainly because the Blizzard has put so much stuff into this game, as compared to most RTS games. Like it's a very, multifaceted package, you know, like there's the whole campaign, which has been, you know, criticized for being only the Terrans, but it's Well, it also has about as many missions as the first game did across three races. But the thing that makes it different and more interesting is that it branches, and you can choose missions that you'd like to do. In some cases, they're mutually exclusive. You know, you can help this character or that character, and doing one or the other will lock it out.
Oh, so you have to play the campaign multiple times to play all of the missions?
Yes. In some cases, yes. Some of them are just straight up optional things that you can just do or not. But it's good because they have a really nice variety of missions. And so if there's a particular mission where you get in there and you're just like, I don't like this kind of mission, I don't like doing this, or maybe even this one's too hard for me, in a lot of cases, you just don't have to do it. There's also adjustable difficulty, of course, though. But the thing that makes it nice is that RTS campaigns traditionally suffer from, and Blizzard has admitted this with StarCraft, that they often suffer from trying to act as if they're preparing you for multiplayer. So they're either way too similar to multiplayer, where it's you've got this structure that's like
we're AI scrimmage,
they're way too far in the other direction, and it's just super scripted. Run a guy through a map.
Right.
StarCraft II does an incredibly good job of blending those in really, really nice ways. You know, I mean, what I mean by that is giving you a systemic environment to complete the mission in, but doing it in ways that have like scripted events that occur, or an AI that adjusts the dynamics of it to keep you from just getting in too comfortable or a position. It's nice to play a game that feels like a fully constructed single player campaign that is an actual game, as opposed to kind of just like a narrative canal that you can kind of just push your way through.
A narrative canal sounds terrible.
Yes, it does. Do you know what I mean, though? Like, I was thinking about what makes StarCraft...
You mean like a birth canal.
Like, yeah, you know, like pushing your way through amniotic fluid and then emerging into the world.
Yeah, being birthed.
Yes.
That's what playing a video game is normally like.
That's what it's usually like, but not in StarCraft 2. In StarCraft 2, it's like a video game.
Okay. That sounds way better. That sounds less gross.
It's much less gross. No, but I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, there are a lot of games that are difficult or challenging, but usually they tend to be difficult, like, on a very, very, very granular level. Like, if you're playing a shooter that's difficult, or an action game that's difficult, or, like, an adventure game that's difficult, it's tough because right now there's an enemy that is really tough, or there's a puzzle that's hard to solve, or there's, like, an obstacle that's difficult to surpass. It's challenging, like, in the moment at any given time. Whereas
StarCraft,
no, but yeah, and strategy games in general are very different, because they give you, you know, it's like, here's this thing you have to achieve. You're making decisions that ripple out in ways that are part of a system. You know, like, again, to compare it to like a more kind of modern type of narrative game, you can still make decisions that ripple out, but they tend to be fairly neutral ones. It's like, I'm going to make a character that's better at this thing, but that's not a bad decision. That's just part of, you know, how your character develops in an RPG like way. Whereas in a strategy game, within the context of a mission, you actually have to plan out some kind of thing that you're going
to
do.
And you have to strategize.
But I just mean, that's a game like attribute that is actually not really a part of most video games. Like, most video games aren't really, you wouldn't really describe them as a game in the sense that word has traditionally been used for most of history, because you're pretty much just presented with things that just happen one after another, and you react to them.
I mean, you're talking about being reactive versus forming intent.
Exactly,
et cetera. And
obviously the strategy is not a thing that StarCraft II, you know, has a monopoly on, but it is really unusual to play this kind of campaign where there are characters and there's a story and you've got this hub that you go back to and you've got branching paths that you can upgrade things in. Like, that tends to be the domain of sort of like first or third person games.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool having all that stuff together in one game. It's, you know, most strategy developers can't afford to produce a big lavish production like this. It's just, unless you're Total War. I mean, there's a couple other examples, but it's pretty rare.
Is it similar? It sort of sounds like a more fleshed out, or at least more expensive version of like the Dawn of War 2 campaign, where you have like, you get loot and other stuff, and you can like level up your dudes between missions, and you choose what order to do the missions in and stuff.
Structurally, it's like that, but the actual moment-to-moment gameplay is very different. Dawn of War is almost more like almost more like Diablo with more guys in it in the single player, whereas StarCraft really straddles a pretty broad spectrum because it still has the base building stuff.
Yeah.
So some missions.
I mean, like the level that we were looking at before we started recording looks the most like that.
Yeah.
Out of what I imagine StarCraft 2 missions look right. like, where you're controlling a guy and maybe he has some backup, but you're like using his talents.
That was a cool mission because you're controlling one single guy. You only ever have direct control over one guy for the whole mission. But then in the background, you've got your AI buddy who's Jim Raynor, the guy you usually play, like building up a whole base in the background and sending out guys to reinforce you, which I thought was really a cool creative thing. And that was actually the first mission I'd played with that structure. There's like quite a broad variety of mission types in this game. I mean, there's some where you literally just have a few guys and there's never any base element at all in the whole mission. And then there's some where you start from scratch and you build up a whole thing.
I remember when you and Nick were going to press events for this, there were a few aspects of the game that were being ripped out and redone at the time. Do you remember? I can't remember what the hell those were.
That was the tech and research systems.
And
I don't remember what they were liked at the time. Well, they're two different things.
You can research Tekken 3.
Tekken
4.
That's the Tekken research system, yeah.
I don't remember what they were before they rehauled them, but they're good now.
Sweet.
Yep. Pretty awesome.
You use those to upgrade from Jack to Gun Jack. To get...
What is Jack?
to get the kangaroo with like the baby kangaroo in his pouch.
What?
How
did you get there?
I'm still talking about tech and research. That's all.
Oh.
Sorry.
That's okay.
There's a kangaroo in that named Jack?
No. There's a big buff guy named Jack, and then there's the like robotic cyborg version of him named Gun Jack.
So where does the kangaroo come in?
Also, there's a kangaroo.
Oh, I thought you were talking about how he took the money. He's not giving it back.
I thought that's what you were talking about as well.
Oh, Kangaroo Jack.
Sorry.
No, maybe that's where my brain was going. Yeah, no.
He's not giving it back. It's pretty much gone. It's with that kangaroo.
There's the alligator that has the same skeleton as the kangaroo that can punch, and then there's the kangaroo, and it has a baby kangaroo in its pouch.
Also punches?
Yes. So you punch, and they both have boxing gloves on, so you punch, and also the baby kangaroo punches.
Can you get a hit with the baby kangaroo fist?
I think so, which is really good.
StarCraft 2 has got a shitload of content.
There's all these Tekken crossovers going on lately.
There's
Tekken X Street Fighter, which
people
is in development
probably
at Capcom.
Make a Tekken with the map editor in this game based on
but
how
like,
fucking
Tekken X StarCraft 2 beat them to market. Didn't even announce it. It was just a surprise.
Can unlock the Tekken research tree, which allows you to have a kangaroo with a baby kangaroo
Blizzard
who punches people.
You know. They have so much money. They can just do all that kind of stuff.
They've got those licensed songs in the jukebox. They've licensed the entirety of the Tekken universe to show up in the tree upgrade system. Crazy shit.
So yeah, I'm a big Tekken fan, so I'll be playing.
What?
Speaking of the research system, the Tekken research system, there are pretty hilariously ridiculous video gamey things in there. The research is either Zerg research or Protoss research, and so you like study elements of these alien races, and then you incorporate them into their own. And there are things like the Zerg research. The first choice you make in Zerg research is you can either outfit your bunkers with heavier armor or give them a turret on top. And the rationale for like how this ties in to Zerg research is we study the Zerg ultralisks. And we came up with the idea of these armored bunkers. And it's like, I'm pretty sure you should have had that idea on your own. Like, I don't know if I want you to wait to see this like huge hulking alien beast and be like, armor.
Oh, a turret.
A turret. Yeah, the turret is like inspired by the Zerg spore cannon, which is just like a turret thing. We thought of the idea, like, really? Because your guys have guns, like actual guns that they already use. And you've got vehicles with turrets
inspired
on them.
Inspired by so 6,000 years of turrets, maybe. But mostly this Zerg spore cannon.
We looked at our own siege tank, and we were inspired by the turret placed on the top of it.
Zerg's actually patented the technology first, so you have to,
you have to license it. Yeah, the technology, the artifact is in
licensed from Zerg.
It's like how George Lucas like get a cut logo. Of the droid.
Yeah.
Of the droid.
You love that.
I fucking hate it.
Oh, you do it a lot for something you hate.
Yeah, so I can overcome my fear of that droid sound effect.
Yeah, you should just do Gunga Galunga in that voice. Just nail both of you guys to the wall simultaneously.
Droid.
No, you got it backwards.
Galunga. Oh, yeah, sorry.
Good Sweet. Work, everybody.
Yeah, well done.
Man.
Video
so
games.
How far through the campaign are you at this point?
I have no idea.
Okay. I read that there's something like, I don't know, 29 missions or something. But like you said, you don't actually do all of them. So
no, I think you can do a pretty substantial majority of them.
Are there six there are some cutscenes? That walk off.
The cutscenes, I have to say, like,
yes,
you know, all of this lore and like characters and dialogue was way cooler 12 years ago to me.
Well, what, you don't also, like Steve Rayner anymore?
Defeat the StarCraft 1 opening cutscene of noodly redneck blues guitar and like space truckers? Because that
and a dude's head explodes inside his own helmet, yeah. I think.
This game is actually even Maybe. Way more good old boys in space than StarCraft 1 was. Like, they've just gone balls out with that theme. Like, they've got fucking Sweet Home Alabama and Freebird and shit on the jukebox.
Because I remember that surprising the crap out of me when I first played StarCraft.
That's actually a great cutscene.
Because the box art is all just space marines murdering fools. Then the beginning of that game was like mesh hat guy or whatever, yeah. basically.
Yeah.
Maybe
smoking
happy.
A cigar inside yeah. of his helmet. Yeah. I mean, that's the cover art of this game, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
A dude smoking a cigar
inside
of his helmet.
This game is all cigar and helmet.
Yeah. No, this game's all about like southern.
Every space marine has a cigar
growl.
In their helmet. It's requisition? What?
It's deployed from the
yes,
helmet.
Yes. I know words of language.
It's fine.
I don't know about that.
You're good at talking.
I talk good. Gunga. Gunga. That's all. The only time I'm saying it, Chris.
I don't believe you.
I believe me.
It's coming back.
No.
You got another one chambered. You're just waiting to pull the trigger. I can tell. So wait. That was a yes or a no on the sick cutscenes.
It has cutscenes.
They're hella sick.
Some of them are cool, I guess. Right, I mean, I don't know. Like, it's definitely, you know, the writing is.
If you were 12 years younger,
Southern soldier guys are in space and they fight aliens. Yeah.
If you were 12 years younger, you might like it more.
Yeah, I would say that's the case.
But
although
are they better than most like gung ho space marines? Are they still basically just USMC but with a armor suit on?
I'd rather watch this than like the Killzone story, for example.
Yeah, because I mean, it seems like they. I haven't really watched it, but if they do have some amount of like, you know, Southern good old boy thing going on, that at least has more character to it than just like Gears of War.
Yeah,
space marines that are like, "Hoorah! Hell yeah!" You know, like,
right.
At least they have a Southern accent while they're doing it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, and
they're
also
maybe they
are,
have a guy like that in Gears of War now. But
they probably do. They're also
the
are
cowboy.
He transferred from the Space Marines to the other.
I think
ones.
I've seen a screenshot of a cowboy hat guy. I didn't play Gears of War 2, but
we did for
a few hours,
half an hour or something. Yeah.
But there are occasional moments in the because most of the cutscenes in this game are in engine. They obviously use much 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 higher res assets than the main game does, but you know they're rendered in real time. But then there are. You know, a really major point, you get the big
Blizzard cutscenes.
Blizzard cutscene, yeah. And, you know, most of those are the same kind of stuff you see in most Blizzard games. But every once in a while, there will be just a shot or just like a bit of composition that is just astonishingly gorgeous. And that tends to be when they show really big landscapes or have
something. And that's when you press F10 and fraps.
Right, yeah. mainly stuff where dust is involved. Like, I'm still blown away. Like, the first half hour of WALL-E was like my favorite fucking thing ever because really well done dust in CGI with like proper light refraction and stuff.
Chris Remo
explodes
blown
my fucking
away
face. I don't know. Do you guys
dust.
Know what I mean at all?
Yeah.
Like, you can make really amazing looking stuff with light hitting like particles.
Yeah. I mean, I was really impressed. Did you see, did you watch that like stop motion Red Dead Redemption stuff that they.
Stop motion?
Or I mean, sorry, a time lapse. That's what I meant to say.
No,
there was a video clip that they released.
I saw that like McKinema thing that film director made that I thought
bad. No. Basically, if essentially in Red Dead, apparently, if you just like put the controller down.
So it's the Red Dead equivalent of the Kornoskasi GTA 4 stuff?
Yeah, yeah. So if you put the controller down, it finds the nearest kind of like vista point and just puts your view there. And I think it actually like increases the res of like the lighting effects and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
And so a guy just put the controller down and recorded like full 24-hour cycles from all the different points in the world that it would do this and then made it so it was like one frame every 10 seconds or something, you know? So it was like high-speed time-lapse, kind of like when you sleep in Far Cry 2. Or, yeah, like Jake said, that GTA 4 thing. And so...
One frame every 10 seconds? You have that backwards?
One frame per 10 seconds of world time.
Oh, I thought you meant played back at. Okay.
No.
Tick.
Right. Tick. As time-lapse footage is. And so, like, their lighting and shadow engine is goddamn unbelievable. Uh-huh. Like some of the places you will see, like the sun rising and the sun rays like accurately cut around all the edges of the clouds, and they're like projecting the shadows of the clouds on, you know, the plane as right. they move, and the sun's going up, and you know everything casts shadows, and yeah, you see these incredibly accurate sun rays just like cutting through trees and like individual around leaves and stuff.
So
like that.
So Chris would like this. You're saying,
yeah, you would like this like thing. Yeah. It's really cool, and yeah, I think it is the
is
kind
that
of thing.
Just a YouTube video.
It was. I don't know if you've ever seen this on Eurogamer. They have this like subsection called Foundry Digital thing? Foundry. Yeah. So the Digital Foundry guy did this thing.
Yeah.
And like set it to music from the soundtrack and stuff, and it blew my mind. Like just. Because like I said, I think that they kind of like crank up the res of that stuff when you go into Vista mode. Because I don't think, I don't know. I didn't notice it being this hardcore of lighting right. effects when I was just running around. But it's really impressive and awesome when a game engine can be that much like an actual place. You know,
maybe in fucking six goddamn months when they release the PC version, you can enable
put
all
it
that
in
shit.
Ultra mode, yeah. Or maybe it is when you're running around and it's just
you don't notice it because you're parallax. Like how you don't notice it in real life until you stop and look.
Yeah.
I mean, I did notice like sun rays coming through trees and around the edges of mountains and stuff. I think it just depends on what time of day.
That's always the
best
in games when you can manipulate the camera into a position where the sun has to filter through branches and stuff.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So awesome. Good work, whatever we were talking about. Dust in Wall-E, I think that was... You're going to put that on the Games Discussed? Wall-E
Dust.
Film.
Maybe the THQ Wall-E game has that in it.
I assume.
Probably not. Oh, maybe it does.
I don't know.
It probably has dust in it. That's probably there.
But it might have the, like...
The majesty of dust.
Well, it might have just, like, the 7-year-old Unreal Engine dust sprite festival.
Man, speaking of like, Pixar games, did you ever, Steve, end up playing the Toy Story 3 game?
I didn't. I just read about how some of the guys from work have played it. They said
it. I've heard it has a really cool open world thing in
the,
it.
The weird, like, story, or, like, toy playtime builder mode?
It's called, I can't remember what it's called. But, it's basically...
Sweet.
It's called, like Woody's Roundup or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's basically you can do a bunch of story missions, or you can go to this little town and there's a bunch of like systemic submissions within the town that allow you to build new buildings and then like change the colors and, you know, customize all the buildings and stuff. And then you can unlock just like apparently it's all about doing weird systemic missions in this little open world, and then
but you're also sort of creating that open world as you play
through
it, right?
And then unlocking new stuff to like put in the world, and you can like unlock new accessories to put on the people, so there's just like toys and people walking around, and you can just go in and say now they're all wearing this silly hat, and then you go back out into the world and all the people walking around have a silly hat on now.
Sweet.
Stuff like that. Yeah, apparently it's like just a lot of fun, and they went really deep on it, like, you know, like it's sort of the story mission that missions that follow the movie are what you're kind of expected to play, and then off in the corner there's this thing that just goes down the rabbit hole and there's all this crazy shit.
That's interesting.
Awesome.
I'd be curious to kind of read the story behind that.
It
gives the impression of maybe that was the real game, but then they had to bolt the false game on top of it.
Yeah,
I'd play that game.
I will play it. I want to and will in my life.
You
want to
beat Toy Story 3 the video game?
I want to at least play their weird town building.
Yeah,
strange thing. Yeah.
Speaking of building things, I recently
you build bases
went
in
through.
Too.
Well, yeah, that also. But actually, prior to that, a couple of weeks ago now, I keep forgetting to talk about
it
on the podcast.
Singularity?
But I no. Oh God, I need to remember to talk about that. After
I don't think you build shit in Singularity.
I know, but
you sort of like destroy stuff with your time hand.
Sometimes.
Yeah. When it's been scripted to happen. But no, a couple weeks ago, I went through a phase of several days where I like obsessively played SimCity on the iPhone.
Whoa. It's like a port of SimCity 1?
It was 2
SimCity
or 3,
three,
I think.
I think. Oh, okay. 3,000.
3,000.
I made 3,000 of those games?
Yeah.
Fuck me.
Yeah. And it worked pretty well.
It would kind of be cool if it was a port of the SimCity 1, like SNES version.
That's the one that I've played the most of. Well, not on the NES, but on the Apple II. I played the most of it on that.
Or SNES, but yeah.
It's cool. It's obviously you got to squeeze a lot of stuff into that screen, but it works well when you get, especially after you kind of develop some muscle memory with the weirdness of scrolling around.
You built a city. You simulated a city.
I totally simulated a city.
What did you call your city?
A diplomatic pouch. I've been watching The X-Files recently for the first time. I'd never seen that show when it was aired. I think I may have mentioned this on a prior cast.
You
but
better not have.
There was this one episode.
Yeah, the diplomatic pouch.
Yeah, where they kept whole MacGuffin of this episode was a diplomatic pouch, which I'd never heard that term before. And they kept saying it again and again. And it became this like hilarious weird thing in my mind where you say something enough and then it loses all meaning.
Well, what the hell? For me, it doesn't have meaning in the first place. What is it?
It's like a leather zipper envelope or something.
Yeah, it was just like a fucking
stuff
folder, but it was something that a diplomat
along with
one.
The diplomat have like, you know, clearance to not be checked through customs.
I see. Okay.
They have diplomatic immunity with their diplomatic pouches. And that word is on my mind so much, and it became so hilarious to me that when I loaded up SimCity and asked me for the name of my city, I just typed diplomatic pouch. Oh, and then, so I made diplomatic pouch, and then because it had been years since I'd last played a SimCity game, I ran the place into the ground pretty fucking quickly, and I restarted diplomatic pouch a few times, and eventually I kind of got to the point where I understood kind of how to, you know,
how to manage that
the
pouch.
Optimal city, right. And then but I'd kind of powered my way through it and it was not very well planned. And so then I made a new city that I called New Pouch. And that was like my ideal, real effort using all the knowledge I'd learned from this other city. And I kicked the shit out of it. Like
the shit out of that pouch?
Yeah. No, I mean, like I had
you fucked up diplomatic pouch.
200,000 citizens by like 20 years into it. It was ridiculous. Like I just fucking burned through it. And the way that I realized to do it is by basically just being like total conservative, like no government spending at all for a couple decades. And then as soon as there's a bunch of people in there, you just rape the fuck out of everyone with taxes and just enact every single like civic ordinance you can and like every single liberal tax and spend policy available. Then basically by that point, your city's so amazing that there's always people who want to come there. Even though they all complain about the taxes all the time. So that was fun. And then because I started playing this game like intermittently where I would be doing something and then I would just leave it running in the background on like lowest speed, just passively. And I would check in on it every once in a while. And I would, I would wait for landmarks, like, you know, when the year gets to a certain point and like nuclear power is available, then I could actually go in and do something. Cause I mean, at that point my city was pretty much running itself. So there wasn't a lot for me to do until new things were available.
Yeah.
And then I
remember doing that with the PC version of SimCity 1 where
me
I
too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Leave it on with the screen off and then you'd come back and right. Mom had loaded up WordPerfect instead.
Oh man, WordPerfect.
Yeah.
But you can also put it in accelerated time, when you just want to power through to something. And so at one point I put my iPhone down and I made dinner or something, you know, and then I came back to it a couple hours later and I realized I had left it on in 3x speed. And my city, you know, when I left it was just incredible, thriving metropolis. And I went back to it and it was like the year 3050 and all of my like water pipes were broken and all the power plants had blown up and there were like 200 people left in the city and there was garbage everywhere in the streets. Like basically my city
and
went
you zoomed
through this.
In and there was just a guy with a shotgun fighting off like yeah, right. nuclear
that's,
mutants.
That's exactly what I thought when it happened. Like it really, I created like I Am Legend.
Yeah.
On accident, but just my
by
my,
cooking like, dinner with your phone on
government neglect. Yeah, like I mean, this government had basically just like left this city to its own devices.
That's
to
awesome.
Wither and die for yeah. centuries and centuries.
And human and, nature like, dictates that everyone ended up killing themselves.
Will take over. Yeah, yeah,
and each other.
It was amazing. And then I was actually able to because
the dog population was in the thousands.
Yeah. I was actually because there was so much of an existing just basic like residential and commercial infrastructure there. I was able to bring my city back to the peak of magnificence.
You Charlemagne that shit.
But I was never able to do anything to get it back up to the population that it originally had. So
but the people who were left alive were
glory,
pretty pleased.
Right? Yeah,
though,
no,
they could,
cool. I don't know. It was an awesome experience. And then at that point, I stopped playing because I'd pretty much like exhausted everything I think that game could give me. And then I started wanting. I'm like, man, I wonder if SimCity 4 has more stuff in it than this. And then a few days later, they added it to Steam. So when I finish with StarCraft 2, I think I'll probably load that up.
I wonder if you're running iOS 4 and you plug in a USB keyboard, if you can type Shift FUND and get $10,000.
Does iOS 4 support a USB keyboard?
You can plug a USB keyboard or pair a Bluetooth keyboard to it, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
To your iPhone?
Yeah.
Crazy.
It came with the iPad stuff, I think. But that might allow cheats.
Yeah.
That's all I was thinking about the whole time you were talking.
Is, really?
Yeah.
Well, couldn't you just pop up the soft keyboard? I don't know what an iPhone is.
You need the app needs
there
to
needs,
support
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there needs to be a prompt for text.
That would be a hilarious, retarded thing if there is a soft keyboard button in the SimCity
just for that
app. Just
that
for just for typing shift F-U-N-D.
There isn't one.
Yeah.
What the iPhone needs is Sim fucking Ant.
Sim Ant? Fuck yeah.
I never played Sim Ant.
Did I tell you guys?
People good. A lot of people.
You take over a yard and then you chase people out of their house with Ant Infestation.
It's an awesome game.
It's one of those games that everyone who really sat down with it at the time seems to have really fond memories of.
Yeah,
if you get into Sim Ant to the point that you know what you're doing, it's good. And then at
is
the
it hard
there's
to know
a big
what you're
fucking
doing?
Spider that is horrible.
When you kill the spider for
like
the first time, so satisfying.
Yeah, it's great.
Like Limbo.
Also satisfying.
Sim Ant, it's not hard to get into, but it not a whole lot happens for the first hour or two. Yeah. At least when I was a kid playing it, because you're just an ant.
I was way more accepting of that though in those days.
Yeah, you're an ant living in a yard, and then
you play as a single ant.
You're not the god of ants. The ant that you're controlling. I don't know. You're also Lord of Ants. It's
Lord of Ants.
Yeah,
is that what you said?
It's like Land O' Lakes,
but with ants and lords instead of lands and lakes.
I remember the windscreen for that is just a picture of the owner of the house and his dog, but their eyes have like color cycling spirals or like circles emanating out that are red because they've gone crazy.
Yeah.
They've gone crazy from ants.
That.
Even the dog?
Yeah, the dog also is crazy.
I was picturing a way worse thing you were
going
to say.
No, they're not just covered in ants. They're just going...
I was just picturing their eyes were gone and streams of ants were going into their eye sockets.
Jesus.
That's the visceral game, Sim Ant.
Yep.
did I tell you guys that when
your ants devoured them eyeballs first? So
or from some orifice and then came out of the eyeballs.
It's all good. It's all good stuff.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah. Will Wright is a fucked up guy.
Well, but
when it comes right down to it.
Now that Will Wright has wholly left Maxis and EA, they're free to do whatever the fuck they want with his licenses.
Which is Darkspore.
So Darkspore, yeah, but coming soon, visceral game, Sim Ant.
But did I tell you we talked about Darkspore a little bit last week?
Yeah,
right?
We did.
Did I tell you that I interviewed a guy there from Maxis, and I mentioned, you know, like, oh, this is really unusual for you guys. You know, I've been playing Maxis games for a really long time, and something to do with like anything you've ever done before is very strange. And it turns out that the guy that I talked to has been at Maxis since the original SimCity.
Wow.
He's now that Will Wright has left. He's the longest serving guy there. But
yeah.
he was like the producer on Sim Ant and Sim Tower. Like
Saito
designed Sim Tower, but then this guy was the North American producer for it. It was crazy. I was able to talk to this guy about like his career in games at Maxis has basically directly mirrored like my career playing video games. Like Sim City was one of the absolute very first games I ever played. It was really cool to meet a guy who worked on that and like, you know, Sim Ant and Sim
Life,
which I never understood. Did you ever play Sim Life?
Sim Life and Sim Earth both confused the shit out of me at the time.
Oh, Sim Earth,
they're
that's what
really
I'm thinking.
Complex,
I'm thinking of Sim Earth. Those were both complicated games.
Yeah.
Those were both really like, really sim like.
They might not be if you go back and play them now, but I did not understand what the hell was happening.
But that is
games.
Kind of, I mean, that because before you said that was kind of what I was thinking is that Darkspore almost seems like a sort of early 90s Maxis thing, you know, like.
Like what?
Well, I mean, not the actual like game mechanics, but just the idea of doing something weird
only
tangentially
totally
related
to
like SimCity or whatever core, you know, IP is. They're like, well, we did SimCity, therefore I can make a weird evolution sim because I fucking feel like it, you know, or even when they got into weird shit like SimCopter, you know, or whatever. It was sort of like there was a while where they just were.
Were things like SimCopter and Streets of SimCity, were those actually Maxis?
Some of those were licensed.
Yeah.
I think SimCopter was actually done in-house at Maxis. I got the impression it was. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But
I don't remember.
There was just a period sort of like between, you know, the original SimCity and SimCity 2000 and when The Sims came out where they were just shotgunning a lot of different ideas out of Maxis. And then it kind of focused down once The Sims came out.
Yeah.
And then they really put all of their eggs into the Spore basket.
Right.
And maybe at this point they're kind of going to be trying more stuff. You know?
I would be interested to see that. That's one of the main reasons I'm interested in Darkspore. The other being, I like Diablo style games. But I totally agree with you, and I hope that it allows Maxis to become just kind of a computer game developer again, instead of the company that does this big monolithic thing for just like that forever. Yeah. And then the next big Will Wright thing, like, I mean, I don't, you know, Will Wright is a uncommonly interesting and talented and creative person.
Yeah.
And I, you know, the studio probably all things considered is worse off without him, but I would imagine, but it's really cool if they kind of use that as a springboard to say, all right, we no longer have this big crazy figurehead. Let's try to figure out what this studio is now.
Yeah.
And let's just try some shit. I think it seems cool.
Like, you know, like if you've seen any of, well, I mean, I know you have, but if the theoretical reader has seen any of Will Wright's presentations where he's shown like prototype stuff that they did while they were, you know, trying to figure out what Spore was going to be. It seems like in the earlier era, a number of those prototypes might've actually gone into full production and become a weird, you know, like, right, you know, sim solar system or whatever, you know, as a standalone kind of entertaining simulation product. And, but because it's sort of, we're in the modern era where it's like everything has to be a AAA production, right, they all only got so far to the prototype stage and then it just got shut down or somewhat rolled into this one big product, you know.
That, I mean, and that's, and I wonder how much of that is kind of the modern AAA mentality and how much of it is just kind of when studios become institutions. Because, you know, when you look back at what Molyneux did at his studios at Bullfrog and early Lionhead, it's like those studios put out so many games of such different, interesting, or like different early tone. Blizzard. And early Blizzard to some extent. Yeah.
Silicon and Synapse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, those types of companies that have that strong identity tend to end up, and like Firaxis, Civilization, they're another example.
Or like DMA Design. Doing Lemmings and GTA and et cetera, et cetera. And then GTA 3 hits and it's like, well, now Body we do Harvest. That. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. Yeah. That does tend to happen. And it does bum me out because those studios, the reason they made their name in the first place generally is because they were respected for this incredible portfolio. And then they tend to have, you know, one franchise that's the catalyst for propelling them into the stratosphere of notoriety. But they usually come from a background of really wide, kind of broad creativity.
Yeah, I mean, even, like Lionhead is a fair example of that, where it's like, now they're the Fable studio. You
right,
know?
Exactly.
Like
they
aren't even,
I mean,
they aren't even Fable and Black and White anymore.
Nope,
you know?
Just Fable. Yep. And Milo. Fable and Milo.
Time for a break.
All right.
With Milo.
Video game.
Approved. How is that Jurassic Park game going? Sounds like it's coming along.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's basically me singing the Jurassic Park theme.
That's cool.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
Is this...
What's the menu?
Oh, okay. And then after that, you back into Samuel Jackson's arm.
You guys don't know how happy I would be if we made that game.
I would be. I think I do know.
Yeah. I know how happy you would be. You'd be extremely happy.
I would be so happy.
You should have that. There should be a like an arcade machine somewhere in the world.
And it just contains Beck into Severed Arm. There's no way I could get that into the game.
Oh, it'd be so good.
But yeah, having an arcade machine that is back into Samuel Jackson's arm just makes me think of an amazing setting for that game, which is like it's a very like meta-aware setting where they reopened Jurassic Park based on the events of the movie of Jurassic Park.
Where it's like, that movie was a big hit. Why did we close this island?
Yeah. And so people go to it and it's like, yeah, the attractions are recreations of the movie scenes that took place in
Universal Studios Jurassic Park ride inside of actual Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
On Isla Neblar.
Right.
Isn't that what it's called?
I don't know.
Nublet.
Isla Nublet.
Yeah, but there's just like a ride that's like a thrill, you know, a thrill ride that you put on a little bungee harness and climb up a dinosaur fence. And they just turn on some fake sparks and you jump off of it and like get caught by the bungee cord.
What do you do?
You fall off of a dinosaur.
Oh, man, that'd be sweet.
Cast breaker right there. You did it.
So I'm looking forward to that game now that you...
It's going
to
be awesome.
Yeah. It sounds weird, but I like it.
That should at least be the loading screen for the Flash website. Is a character who...
a guy just...
They back up, and then when it's 100%, it does this, and then it turns into an outline of that, and then disappears off the page.
Yeah.
Oh, like a Unix system? I know that.
That's the one thing I want to do in that game.
Have that line of dialogue?
No.
A recreation of that?
Yeah.
Like in the corner, it says Unix system version 3.6.
Well, so are you saying this would be the... front menu, or yeah, yeah. Be so a like, puzzle in the game?
No, like the front menu would just say like Unix system booting up, and then it would go and make little analog click sounds as it like 1 FPS zoomed you into that yeah. like IRIX file browser, so you could load up your save game that's located in like yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Why would that not be it? That should be a given that that's what's in the game.
No, because you could make some bullshit like CSI style, like computer enhanced thing. But if you make it look like the best the 90s have to offer, if you ever show anyone on a video screen on a computer monitor, you have to put the little QuickTime movie player scrolling underneath. Because like there's that shot where one of the guys in the movie is talking on the phone with the person who's at the dock. He's like, that boat's leaving any minute now. And he hangs up the phone. But if you look, there's just a QuickTime movie player running underneath it.
I never noticed
like
that.
Someone, like the film's IT guy was like, okay, and action. Backing off now. Play the QuickTime movie. And then someone acting against the QuickTime movie.
They didn't change it.
Video
Steampunk is one of those things, like cyberpunk, that almost no one actually ever does, like, full on, you know? So I don't actually, like, if a thing was actually fully steampunk themed, it would probably
I would
be
really
cool,
happy.
Whereas it generally is just, like, little elements of it in a more generic thing.
Steampunk, I makes me mad still, because whenever I think of film that is steampunk, it's just going to be Wild Wild West, or...
Right, exactly.
Or it's
what,
gonna be,
okay, so what is a good example of that?
I don't really know.
I would be fucking pleased if someone actually did a balls-to-the-wall cyberpunk thing, though.
Exactly.
That would make me really happy.
Like,
that,
like there's so little of it. Like, the original Ghost in the Shell anime, you know?
Yeah, but not. I don't want the anime version. I like the westernized version of that stuff.
Right, no, but I'm just saying, like, you know, yeah. that's full-on cyberpunk, and, like, there's not a whole lot else that is. Like, The Matrix is sort of a... version of it, but not really.
I want
me.
People with little blue lenses over their eye that can change yeah. shit and stuff like
yeah,
that's
like,
what I fucking want.
Yeah, like Blade Runner is closer to full-on cyberpunk.
Yeah.
But like, even then, they don't have like...
Blade Runner's
like,
more analog, though.
Yeah, like Deus Ex is full-on cyberpunk, yeah. where it's like, we have... Like
cyborgs and shit.
Yeah, like cybernetically modified people and
yeah.
like jacking into, you know, the virtual
right, the Matrix net
and
the
shit.
Fact that The Matrix has all of like everyone has wears black leather and stuff, it makes it less good.
Yeah. It does.
Yeah. I'm not a huge fan of cyberpunk stuff, but if someone did one really good one that was just fucking all out 1992 video game box
yeah.
art cyberpunk,
yes.
I'd be pleased.
Exactly.
As shit.
That will
no,
never happen.
I know, but like the thing is, we're getting to the point where that is like retro enough that you could do it as like almost
but
like a period.
I don't think it's
piece.
Retro in a way that most people have any connection or nostalgia for.
Yeah, but that doesn't really matter.
I
like,
think you could,
I think that
you
if
could
the
bring
creator,
that back around as cool.
If the creator
I
has.
Think you could do it. It would be hard, but you could do it.
If the creator has.
I'm not arguing someone
that,
couldn't do it, but
yeah.
I don't think it'll
happen. I think it's less about the audience having that point of reference than the people making it having that point of reference and then making something that's awesome that people just kind of take at face value and they're like, that's sweet.
Yeah, I mean, possibly.
It would be hard, but you could
I mean,
hilarious
I don't know. It reminds me of Ken Levine talking about BioShock and being like, you know, there's a reason we decided to make this with the aesthetic we did and not another, like, cyberpunk spaceship. Just, I mean,
yeah.
you know, some
Except
things...
Except that they still made the weirdest, least accessible
yeah.
fiction
Yes, but I mean, I have, you know, personal friends who bought BioShock entirely on that strength who guarantee would never look twice at... Just another
yeah.
sci-fi nerd thing.
Yeah.
They just don't.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
you can. It's getting close to the point that you can embrace the like late 80s, early
yes,
90s-ness
exactly.
of it.
You can turn back around and do like totally straight-faced Neuromancer with no alterations and just like latch on to the shit that is blatantly outdated and, you know, like embrace...
Yeah.
People plugging in a soft, like, as a weird shaped disc into a port behind their ear and shit like that, and be like, yes, we know this will never be the future. This is an alternate future that we
yeah.
enjoy.
I mean, I think Transmetropolitan is a decent example of that.
Totally.
Stuff.
But that's, you're marketing that towards, like, this small, nerdy
right,
group of intense nerds.
If you made Transmetropolitan and it had the budget, like, which would never happen, but if Transmetropolitan was starring Johnny Depp as the Hunter S. Thompson Cipher, and it was produced, you know, with the marketing campaign of a Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
People would see it. It could.
And then it would be all
Because, I mean, like, buying an additional spine so you can fire a giant gun. Like, J.J. Abrams made the fucking Star Trek movie, and it was a giant blockbuster. You know, like, you can make people buy into stuff that's traditionally super nerdy. It's all about positioning.
Well, right. I mean, Star Trek is a huge, internationally known franchise.
Yeah, but that nobody except... You know, like traditionally, that
it's
nobody
an internationally
big,
known
nerds.
Franchise that people actually
but I think
were antagonistic towards for 20 years.
I think he successfully did it by heavily dialing back the exclusionary nerdy properties of it.
Yeah.
To great effect, I think.
But without cutting out, like, a lot of the core, like, technological and other touchstones about the property, it was more like the focus of the story and how it was shot and what happened, like, in the plot points and the pace of it. And how the dialogue was written and stuff, you know, like they still had fucking warp drives and stuff. It just was a question of what they focused on moment to moment.
I think the biggest way that J.J. Abrams got people to watch Star Trek is by reminding them that when Star Trek was first on, the characters were actually, in fact, young and attractive.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, people might have wanted to look at William Shatner in that uniform.
I actually really like the original Star Trek series more than any other Star Trek thing I've seen, pretty much. Mainly because it's so not bogged down by canon. Which, like, canon in general is just, like, my least favorite thing about genre anything. You know, like, I like the original Star Trek series because it's just, we're making a show in space with these character dynamics and this general tone and theme.
Right.
And I think that's awesome. I mean, it's dated in a lot of ways, obviously, but I mean, you know, you have to look at it through that filter.
Yeah. To answer your question about what an example of it is, it might not be a crossover example, but it looks like that's what Deus Ex 3 is going to be. Like, when you read articles about that or whatever, like, our touchstones are Blade Runner, Ghost in the Shell, maybe, like, Cowboy Bebop. And it's like, all right, you guys are making Blade Runner world
with Ghost in the
Shell.
Does Deus Ex 3 look like it's going to be good?
I think it looks like it'll
be. Maybe we should talk about this because I saw that trailer and said, fuck this.
The trailer is
probably
not
representative of anything.
Okay.
It's all CGI.
Yeah,
the trailer was just like,
the trailer
was terrible.
Is,
I agree.
Well,
it was really bad.
Okay, so the trailer is not good, but did you watch the leaked footage that Screw Attack cell phoned or whatever?
No.
It
looked nice to you?
It looks really good.
Yeah,
it looks like goddamn Deus Ex. Like, you walk around a, you know, fairly constrained, walkable city. You go inside a building. You know, you talk to a dude to talk your way in or pay him off or
you
whatever.
You do a thing with a lock and with a security camera, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, you find a code on a data cube and then you put it into a lock and get into
a
secret area.
Cubes.
And then you climb through
I'm
a vent and, you know, you pick up a crate and use your strength mod to pick up a bigger crate to find a secret area and you climb on top of stuff and stealth behind guys. And
cool, so it sounds like
it
the Deus Ex
really
that I didn't ever played.
Oh, you can play it. It's on Steam. It'll run really well on your computer.
I own the Mac OS 9 version of Deus Ex.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I can play Deus Ex, like, on my netbook, which I was surprised about.
Wow.
I mean, even though it's 10 years old and everything, but my netbook has, like, integrated 3D
garbage.
I can play it at, you know, like, 60 FPS native res.
Awesome.
It's weird. But I'm happy that I can just take my netbook on a plane and play Deus Ex on it. But yeah. Deus Ex 3, the gameplay video stuff was really encouraging.
It was really nice.
That's cool.
Yep.
I'll play that game.
Also, we might be back.
I'll be a cyborg.
Back, I guess. Yeah.
I don't know. We can be back.
Yeah. I'll be a cyborg man that has a cyborg arm with a sword inside of it. I just don't care. I'll do it. I love it.
That's cool.
A bartender
you do love
has
cyborgs.
A cyborg arm. Yeah.
You of all the people I know, I think you love cyborgs the most.
It's probably true.
It's because you are a cyborg. Secret.
He wishes he were a cyborg.
I don't know. I don't know if I would want to be.
Over the course of your life, you'll slowly replace your limbs with cybernetic limbs.
At
I
what
would do
point
it.
Would you no longer be a human? Imagine if someone asked that. What if someone made a game or something or like a sci-fi book that was about that?
Yeah.
That'd be great if it was about like, when are you no longer a human when you're a robot?
Yeah. Well, sometimes
that'd be an interesting question to address. I wonder if anyone's...
It's when you stop hearing the whisper of your ghost, I think.
Oh, is that...
I'm pretty sure.
Is that a reference?
That's a Disney song from Pocahontas.
It's a reference to Ghost in the Shell, obviously.
Nerd. Obviously. Anime nerd.
Obviously.
All right.
When's the last time you watched Ghost in the Shell?
I have not seen that.
You have Akira on Blu-ray and you've never watched Ghost in the Shell?
Well, he has Akira on Blu-ray because it contains the
hypersonic effect. Yeah. Is there a version of Ghost in the Shell that has the hypersonic effect?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
I've seen very, very, very little anime.
Yeah.
But I have seen Akira, and I liked it.
I've seen kind of a lot of anime and only liked some of it, but some of it's really good. It's a small selection.
I thought you were going to say it's a small world.
It's a small world after all.
After all. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
a Disney song.
From Pocahontas. Like,
no.
No, I really like cyborgs because it's one of those things where, you know, you just don't see a ton of them. They don't.
That's true. They're not really on the street that often.
In games or whatever. Movies or whatever.
It's like a cybernetic organism.
It's a thing that I think people shy away from because they think they are too geeky. And so, like, you don't encounter a ton of them. But I love, you know, like.
Like a neural net processor, a learning computer.
I like the way you keep saying you don't run into very many cyborgs.
You don't hang out with them too much.
Very common.
You just don't see a guy with
aren't
a cyber
pretty
arm.
Pretty common in games. Aren't there a lot of cyborgs?
I don't know.
There used to be a lot of cyborgs.
Yeah. I mean, maybe
there. Where have all the cyborgs gone?
Uh-oh.
The theme.
I hear a remix coming to the tune of whatever. Who did that song? That awful person, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? But it's Where Have All the Cyborgs Gone?
Yeah, that's probably not coming.
I'm
pretty sure
that
was performed by Chris Ramo right now.
Nope.
Do it. All right.
Oh, no.
I don't know. There's probably cyborgs in like StarCraft 2.
There's probably like some kind of augmentation.
Yeah, I would be
character.
Kind of shocked if there weren't.
Yeah, the guy who's been through it all probably has like a laser eye or something.
Yeah.
And laser brain.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know. I really love like Syndicate, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like you upgrade your cyborg dudes.
You do.
I enjoy the hell out of it.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to upgrade a cyborg in a hell of a long time.
Deus Ex 3.
Yeah, somebody just give me a game where I can upgrade
just
a cyborg and I'll give you
cyborg.
My $60. I'll give you $60 to upgrade a cyborg.
That sounds like a Facebook social game microtransaction.
Steve Gaynor has upgraded his cyborg.
I won't do it on I will not do it on
oh,
Facebook.
Oh man, you're drawing the line. Your love of cyborgs is not strong enough to
You're not a fan of the social cyborg.
To coax me into a Facebook game.
Yeah.
No. Sorry. Deus Ex 3, though. I'll upgrade my cyborg in that
Well, what
game.
You don't know is that Deus Ex 3 is a Facebook app.
They'll probably have one.
I'm going to have fucking level 3 augmentation of cyborg sword arm.
They should just name all that shit what it is. Like, StarCraft 2 is, you know, it's just got... It doesn't really matter, but, you know, you upgrade all your shit in the tech trees and everything, and everything is like Hellscream missiles and, you
right,
know.
But you just wanted
like,
to say big missile.
Like big missile. Extra missile. Many missiles. Really fast missile.
So the level 3 cyborg sword arm.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. You should get that sword arm.
The
and the cyborg one. And your StarCraft, I mean, your Deus Ex 3 avatar could also get that arm. But, you
what
know.
Do you mean avatar? Like the character
screen? Yeah, your guy that you're playing in that world.
Oh, the actual character model.
Yeah.
Of course he'll have the fucking
Oh, but I mean,
thing.
Steve should get one.
IRL.
Yeah,
Jake's making the joke about it being real me.
Oh, like a real cyborg.
Oh, yeah. Like I'm saying you should build it.
You are going to be a cyborg.
Yeah, it's like cosplay, but it's real.
Yeah, it's like
a real sword. And then you've severed your arm and replaced it with a sweet piston arm with a sword.
And you go to Comic-Con and be the coolest guy.
At what point, how does cosplay even have to be referenced in that?
Well, because it's like you're making a costume of that.
You're dressing up like your favorite cyborg.
Except by replacing your arm with an actual cyborg
arm.
Well, you're serious about it.
Yeah,
right.
You're like, you know.
It's called being committed to the role that you're cosplaying.
Yeah.
Gulp.
You'd win that contest.
With your severed cyborg sword arm.
That I can stab people with?
Yeah. And then you can take your arm and you can, like,
back
attach
into
it to a different...
It all comes full circle.
That's that conversation.
That's what the actual implication of that scene in Jurassic Park was
Samuel L. Jackson augmented.
Yeah, got a sword arm.
He lost
fucking up raptors left and right.
He lost his arm. Then in the sequel, the intention was he came back with a cyborg arm, but a different writer came on late in the project.
And they're like, what is this cyborg arm?
Yeah.
We cut that character. What was that? And
what, they cut the entire character and they just left the arm?
Samuel L. Jackson's arm does not appear in The Lost World.
I don't remember there ever being a black guy in this movie.
I'm talking about in the sequel.
Don't you remember that arm?
Samuel L. Jackson's return was cut from the sequel.
Samuel L. Jackson's return?
Yeah, when he rips out of a crashed helicopter with his sword arm and murders dinosaurs. Yeah.
They cut that, but they left the other scene of someone else backing into his arm, just, you know, for continuity.
Yeah, I think that's on the Blu-ray, actually, finally. It's a bad telecine, but that's on there. Yeah, it's got, like, the little time code at the bottom and stuff. That's a commentary from Spielberg about it.
Sweet.
Yeah. About how he can't wait to bring it to Kinect.
Good times. Well, that's
game. What the fuck are we talking about?
I played Singularity like a month ago at this point. I keep forgetting to talk about it.
How was Singularity, Chris?
It's definitely a video game.
Dude, I hope you actually have something to talk about Singularity, because every week you're like, fuck, I forgot to talk about Singularity.
I think I did, and I've forgotten now.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, you go around and shoot guys, and there's a time machine in hand that you can use. I mean, it's one of those games where it seems like they had so... I mean, actually, what was funny is I was reading one of the... something by someone who worked on it. I actually don't recall who at the time, but someone was saying something to the effect of, yeah, you know, we had all these systems, and we kept reducing them down and shaving down systems till we came out really with just the core mechanics that were left. And that was really surprising for me to read, because the game feels to me like they did the exact opposite, where they started, you know, with like basically it's a first person shooter where you shoot stuff, and then they just kept adding more and more and more mechanics on it, but never actually made them like work together.
It's too bad that they then called it Singularity.
Yeah, exactly. Because there's never like a moment where everything gels, you know, like you've got your time hand, which you can use to like age things or unage things, but
or do other random things too.
Well, they're all couched
slow
in the
down,
notion, yeah,
or pick up and throw,
right,
or
through time,
yeah, and but
or through space, not time, possibly,
Steve.
Well, then there's also portals. That
you're actually holding it still, and the Earth continues to rotate, so it looks like it's flying. But it can only go east-west.
Ah, that makes sense.
That was removed, and north and south were also added.
You've had your elbow on your desk chair so much that it's worn a hole.
Oh, shit,
I've
frayed my shirt. No! This is terrible.
It's actually,
now you've just got one of those little Renaissance, like...
No, I'm actually hulking out in extreme slow motion.
Singularity guy is
he's
manipulating
actually,
you at the moment.
He saw it happen once and I killed him, but then he's rewound and is now...
He's just aging your shirt extremely, like just like 1% faster than your own self.
Yes.
Mm.
That's happening.
It's,
people at home love this story.
It's pretty good. Pretty good story.
So you're saying you're playing some kind of video game?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It's weird. It starts out like the beginning of that game is the most overt sort of BioShock homage just imaginable. Like it's really, really,
you
really
crash in a plane.
Blatant. A helicopter actually. Mm. But it's not even so much that. It's more just the overall tone of the whole thing and the way everything looks and the lighting and the just like the.
And like the Rapture,
it's on
the underwater
island,
city.
And the you know, you find all the audio logs. I mean, it's so reminiscent of BioShock, shockingly so. But that doesn't it changes a lot over the
BioShockingly
course of the
game.
Jake is now sticking his arm through a hole in his sleeve,
through his elbow hole.
He looks like a hobo now.
Are you schizophrenic and living on the street,
yeah,
Jake?
Ronald Reagan kicked me out of a mental institution in the 80s.
That's too bad.
Oh, yeah. That's too bad.
Yeah. Anyway, Singularity.
That's too bad. So does that mean that it's good at that part?
I mean, basically, it's pretty good. It's not BioShock. You know, I mean, that's the problem when you make your thing that reminiscent of another thing, is if you're not as good as that thing, it's pretty apparent.
Or if you're not that thing. Because, I mean, like, at some point, you can be just as good as the thing, but the people playing it already played the thing.
Right.
You know, or whatever. Yeah. Watch that movie or whatever
this
comparison you want to make.
It starts to be pretty different, but in ways that often are not very flattering to it. You know, because they have all these systems and you have things that you can upgrade and you have things that you can... You get new time-related, like ostensibly time-related.
How many plasmids
powers
are in this game?
There's, you know, six... Half a dozen maybe equivalent things to plasmids, which are just different powers you can use. But the problem is they're all so specifically used. Like it's here in this particular instance, there's this one thing you need to do to like slow down a fan and then you walk through it and you do this. You know, it's all very prescribed.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes have a bunch of powers.
Yeah. Like I only played a little bit of Singularity. I played it at work a little bit. And I didn't understand. Well, I should say, I feel like I understood where that design decision came from, but I didn't really... I think I got the rationale behind it, but I didn't really get why it would be done that way in practice, where it's like, you know, they had like you said, sort of these six different things that your time hand could do. They could like freeze things in air, they could age things, they could unage things, they could like
move physics objects around.
And like
you can pulse emit this stun thing.
Yeah, and but the way they make it work is like it's just sort of based on what you are using it on, it does a different thing.
Right, it's very context sensitive.
Yeah, and so it's like my assumption is they were like, well, we don't want to have people need to like toggle through all these different powers because some won't be as effective on some things as other things, so we'll just make it so each object has one effect that goes along with it, you know.
Well, the problem is, I mean,
and I don't know if it was also like a production level thing where it was like, we don't want to have to make every single thing react to every single power.
Exactly,
you know,
right.
You know, like we don't want to have to make an aging version of all of the enemies or whatever, because like especially I would assume it would just make it a nuke for some things where it's like, well, I'll age this enemy. Okay, well, I killed him instantly because, you know, he turned into a skeleton, you know, or whatever. But in practice, yeah, it was really weird because it was like, all right, memorize what your one power does to all of the different random things in the world, or don't memorize it and just spam it and see what happens, you know. And it's like,
No, it's not. It's just entirely, you just react to these specific things and you're like, oh, here's item or enemy A, I use power X for that, you know, I use this for that.
Yeah.
This is the most efficient thing for that. And then most of the actual interactions with the world, it's all just scripted this to happen this way. Like
it's just a different version of just like press the A button when you go
right, exactly. So that was too bad. Although I do have to say, some people I guess didn't like the ending. I won't spoil it, but if you do play through this game, I really liked how they handled the ending. There's a branching, you know, multiple ending thing you do, and it's I like the way they implemented it. That actually takes advantage of the fact that the story is set in this weird like double time, you know, simultaneously set in 1950 and 2000X, whatever fucking present day.
20XX.
20XX. Yeah. And you go back and forth between them, and I like the way
20XDX.
They cap that.
I don't know what that means.
It's XX.
Mega Man.
Yeah.
20XDX.
Yeah.
That's
also, I think Bomberman is that also.
Yeah. That's the year that Mega Man takes place in, is 20XDX?
Maybe I'm thinking of Bomberman.
I don't know.
I think it's Mega Man 2.
Huh.
Mega Man also. I'm sure a million people who actually played all these
Mega
games
Man 2
will
was,
write
was
in
actually like, yeah, either 19XX or 20XX.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, but...
Well, 20XDX is what I mean
like,
when I
like
say 20XX.
80, 90, XD.
Like, XDX is like XX.
Don't worry about it, Steve.
Oh,
you know,
oh,
like how
oh,
like
the
like TY. Eight, but, yes. Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, no.
I thought you were saying the letter
20XDX.
Okay.
Yeah,
all
it's
right.
Really far in the future.
It's Mega Man XD. Yeah.
I was confused and scared.
Yeah. 200th century.
So Singularity, would you give it like the exploding head or just the head that's kind of smiling or like the straight face?
I have no idea what I'd give it.
What about sound? Is the guy's head exploding about sound?
The sound is really good, actually. Okay. Yeah. No, Raven always does a really good job with sound, and they did it in
Fun Factor head?
Fun fact? I don't fuck.
What's that head doing for the fun factor?
Does anyone else have anything else to talk about?
We could read some reader mail.
Yeah, we
I
get
love
very much.
The readers.
I don't have very much.
Well,
mail.
I don't love. I don't. I do love the readers.
Steve,
I do.
Steve is our
you just,
resident
you
asshole.
You didn't seem to want me to love them by your reaction.
Well, the people what? Love you to hate them.
Yeah, you're the villain of the cast.
I am not. Everybody thinks I'm cool, and likes me.
All right.
Everyone's
and
your
thinks
friend.
I'm nice. Stop it, everybody.
They all want to play with you.
Jared Garst writes, what if you could talk to the monsters? You mentioned games where themes and action clash, giving examples like Spore is about design, not evolution, and Dr. Mario isn't a medical simulator. But you neglected to mention...
Was that really an example
systems.
Anyone ever used?
I don't remember.
I like that it would be.
We probably talked about that.
Dialogue systems, the worst representation of dialogue imaginable. BioWare-style conversations are compelling for some reasons, but do not behave or feel like human interaction. Could BioWare do better? Are there examples of better mechanics? Is this goal possible, short of just parsing text? Also, all party members in Dragon Age are nesting finches based on their obsession with necklaces and gems. That's true. I don't know. What do you guys think? Dialogue systems.
Dialogue systems?
Yeah.
Didn't we talk about those last week?
Were you listening to the email?
No.
This is why everyone is your. This is why you're everyone's
this
favorite.
Is why everyone's friends with Steve.
I apologize. What was the thrust of the question? Sorry. Sometimes these things go on for a long time.
This was not even long.
I know. Jake is fixing his shirt.
Jake is. I don't know if you're fixing it.
No, I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah, basically he's saying dialogue systems are a very poor representation of dialogue, of conversation. Actual conversation.
That
yeah.
is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is also something that has hardly changed at all in many, many, many years.
Yeah. I think it's because...
Yeah, I don't think the BioWare dialogues are closer to human conversation. They're closer to filmic portrayals of conversation.
That's true.
Yeah, and a lot of
that does tend to be, it seems, the kind of broad.
But I mean, every action in every popular game is closer to a filmic representation of that action, like flipping three times and shooting a dude while like then doing a scissor kick to his neck and flipping him into a wall is not how a person actually fights a person.
What?
But it's how a sweet movie ninja dispatches a person.
Right.
You know, I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that dialogue systems have not advanced a whole lot because there it's isn't impossible. Like a clear way forward. You know, yeah. like
many people have devoted huge amounts of effort to trying to solve that, like Chris Crawford, yeah, like and Chris the facade Crawford. Guys. Yeah, well, Chris Crawford is now like a husk of a man. It's horrible. Have you seen interviews with him like in the last couple of years?
No,
where he's just like, yeah, pretty much my entire life savings and everything in my life has been dedicated to
Conversotron or whatever.
Yeah, Storytron or whatever Storytron, it's called. Yeah, yeah. And he was like, yeah, if this doesn't work, I'm pretty much screwed. And he's probably screwed if that's the case.
Yeah.
I feel bad for that guy.
Because it's such a weird... Yeah, that thing definitely seems like, you know, one of those weird evolutionary dead ends. You know, right. it's sort of like...
It's kind of an impressive piece of tech, but it's not going to...
Yeah.
Bear a lot of fruit.
Yeah, because it's just...
I don't know anything about that thing.
It's a dynamic story generator that assembles narratives based on all kinds of variables and things you can input combined with like procedural systems. It's a crazy weird thing.
Yeah. But like the output is not especially parsable.
Yeah, it's not going to be a thing that you could like integrate into another thing very well.
Bold.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
What are you doing over there?
I'm trying to keep my shirt from exploding.
All I've seen you do for like the last 5 minutes is just kind of ineffectually like fold it back and forth.
No, I'll make this work.
I believe in you, Jake.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, I guess it seems like, yeah, people have not looked at conversation as being a core mechanic. And so it's sort of like, well, the dialogue trees that we've always done are good enough for what we need them to do. So we'll continue to try and write good dialogue in a dialogue tree that you just kind of mine the content out of. And that's what I mean. Sorry, that's why I was referring to what we talked about last week, where it feels like since it's all we've got, people could try to make to infuse more play into it, where it's sort of like, instead of the stuff that you say just kind of being deterministic and you either ask somebody about a topic and get information or not, or you get to a branch and you decide, am I going to be an asshole to this person or be nice to them at this branch, and you get some, you know, nice or mean points for it and then continue on with your life. Like, it seems like in a dialogue system, and I'm sure that this happens, my guess, I don't follow text adventures at all, really, but my guess is this has happened way more in text adventures than games that have higher production values, but just the idea that like you can actually express intent, like more long-term intent, right, through conversation, yeah. where it's like, I want to manipulate this guy into thinking that I'm his friend so that he'll give me this information that I need so I can give it to this other guy. Well, you know, yeah. and like, I mean, you don't see that hardly ever, but using the current dialogue system that we have, you know, like just branching dialogue trees, yeah. it seems like that kind of thing would be something you could accomplish if you made it your goal, and that would right. be at least one step
it's also
further
just,
along the dialogue, you know, like systems
I mean,
that we
have. That's something that they didn't really fully achieve, but I liked that Alpha Protocol was trying to sort of nudge in that direction a bit. Like, I like what that game was sort of trying to do.
Yeah.
The fact that dialogue is auditory and cerebral instead of spatial also makes it fucking hard.
Exactly, yeah. No, like, editing tool
like, for that. Like this guy said in the email, there's text parsers, you can type stuff in, but it's not, you can't have, like, a reticule that is pointing somewhere in 3D space, and then you press something, and then it affects change. You know, right. there's no...
Right, but I mean,
how do you input in what you want your character to say in any way that's meaningful other than navigate this maze? No matter how finely grained, yeah. you're still navigating a maze that a designer's put
out
for
that's
you.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what we've got, right?
Yeah.
But people haven't even really fully exploited the potentialities of that form. You know, like I mean, like I said, probably in some cases they have, and they're less you know, they're lesser known examples. But like in games that I play, just like a AAA RPG, you know, you don't really, like, you don't, for instance, you don't get a mission from somebody that's like, gain this guy's trust so that you can exploit him and then come back to me. You know, because like that sets up theoretically an interesting internal conflict where it's like, all right, it's kind of like, I was listening to an interview with this guy that he was on a strike force to recover stolen works of art, you know, like famous works of art, like that have been stolen from museums by, you know, Renoir or whatever. And so his whole job...
Renoir stole works from museums?
No! An artwork by a well-known artist that was like a national treasure they were trying to get back, right?
So like we both leapt on that.
We're like, oh, union grammar. You talked in the wrong words.
And so, you know, his job would be to find...
Renoir.
The art thieves or, you know, the guys that were brokering it and just like gain their trust for months, you know, so that they would like let him in on this deal. And his cover was that he was like an appraiser, you know, that would tell them that it was genuine or not. And so, you know, he would go through all this time just like hanging out with these guys and getting to know them and basically becoming their friends. And then for the sake of justice, he would have to betray them, you know, and be like, all right, SWAT team, come in and get him now, kind of thing. And you know, like at the end of his assignment, these people would be like, oh my God. And, you know, like they would feel like this guy who was their friend had just, you know, really like hurt them emotionally, you know? And so anyway, it feels like that kind of thing could happen in dialogue systems we have now where over a longer period of time, it's like, all right, I've decided I'm going to say stuff to this guy to make him trust me. So he'll give me this, you know, thing that I need. And maybe over the course of that, you start to get to know that character, quote unquote, and start to feel like I don't actually want to turn him in at the end. Because
you'd need some really good AI and or a really nice, very big script to have that last any longer than like one side quest worth of content. I feel like because otherwise it would, instead of being good or evil, it'd be like, oh well, this dialogue is going to betray trust points and this dialogue is going to earn trust points. You know, I mean, you'd see that spreadsheet pretty quick unless you.
Yeah. But I mean, that's not the point.
Okay.
Right.
I have a hard time having an emotional attachment to a spreadsheet. Once I sort of understand the systems of that stuff, it pisses me off.
Well, I mean, like under the hood, it's a concretization of what happens in real life. Right. Like, I mean, you can't do anything that doesn't have some kind of metric associated with it, right? I mean, it's...
I agree. Sorry, I will just not say what I was saying, because when you said a mission where you have to go earn someone's trust so that you can then obtain information or an item from them, that made me want to play whatever that game is that would tell me to do that, so I'll shut up.
Would there be a fail state for this, or would it just be either the guy trusts you or he doesn't, and then the game keeps going?
Well, I mean, my assumption in this theoretical situation would be, there would be a breakpoint at the end where it's like, okay, I have now gotten in this dude to trust me.
What do you mean at the end? No, I'm saying, what if you don't succeed before the end happens?
When he says, fuck you, Narc, and walks away.
Do you reload it, or do you just keep going, and then you've just fucked it up, and now that avenue's closed to you?
Well, I mean, it's probably not you fucked it up. It's like, you've decided
to... what if you don't succeed?
Well, one would assume that success would not be a requirement for progressing forward in the game.
Right.
You know? So it would be just, like, you could either...
It could just end early
if you don't succeed, you put on the bandana and shoot him.
Yeah, exactly. Tie it behind your head. No, one would assume that, you know, the guy who asked you to do this thing, you could not complete the mission for him, and that's a decision that you're making and get on with your life with whatever was happening, else was happening in the game. I don't know. It feels like we could do stuff with dialogue trees now where you can read multiple moves ahead, like in a chess game, and do things intentionally along that path and maybe have to reevaluate what your plan was before you get to the point that you were kind of angling for early on.
I think with
just branching dialogue that we have, not like trying to go deep into, well, we need like really advanced language interpretation or granularity of we're going to generate new dialogue options on the fly or whatever.
I feel like that kind of thing actually used to be something that like Western RPGs attempted to do more often, was create these simulation-like environments where that like those kind of motivations and system existed. I think the way that you would do that if it was a side quest would be you'd have something of some kind of like day night cycle, or maybe not day night cycle in the sense of like the kind of 24-hour thing that we think of, but I mean in terms of like days that actually pass, you know, and there are like events that you're surrounded by this scripted system, but then within that, you know, you succeed or fail to greater or lesser extent.
Yeah. You can talk to a guy for kind of progress this far through what you can talk to him about today, and then he goes home, and then the next day you can continue and sort of something like that. Sure.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
So something that would actually be interesting for me is if readers are listening and they think of examples maybe in the, you know, text adventure space that
there's
stuff like this going on, just write to questions.idlethumbs.net if there's anything we should check out.
It seems like a quest or type of thing that someone's tried to do somewhere.
Yeah. I'm sure people have tried it,
I mean, in a text adventure where it's just words and a lot of people talking to each other, it seems like you could do a lot with that, and somebody probably has. Thanks, reader.
Totally.
Next email.
I like your emails.
We don't have very much email here.
There's no more email.
We have some other really long ones. Here.
Try to distill the essence.
I will
of
try.
One for
Dominic
us.
Harmon wrote podcast opinions versus reviews. Hey guys, the other day someone on Twitter questioned if people take more from opinions voiced on podcasts than they do from reviews. Thinking about this, two games quickly came to mind: Metro 2033 and of course Far Cry 2. There are two games I didn't really have interest in before I heard you talk about them on the podcast. In fact, after I picked up a copy of Metro 2033, I realized I hadn't even read any reviews of it. After enjoying it for a while, I went online to check out various reactions, none of which would have actually made me go buy the game. So thanks for the recommendations, but to get a point out of this, let's see. What do you think about this and any problems with written reviews? Am I an idiot for ignoring in-depth written reviews of games? Looking at the games I've gotten this year, none of them have been based on a written review. This is sad to me, mostly because the only way I found out about this and rushed out to buy Beyond Good and Evil day one was a non-headline review, probably on IGN of all places. Thanks, Dominic, Melbourne, Australia.
I think that it's not... I mean, I don't think it's podcast versus written reviews, but it's sort of standard game review, itemized breakdown versus...
Versus writing
that tells you what the game is actually like to play.
I agree, like totally.
Telling stories of things that happened to you in the game or the feelings that the game
evokes. And if you can relate it to something in the real world instead of just treating the game as its own vacuum.
Right, if you just list an itemized list of the mechanics in the game and then say also the graphics are beautiful.
Yeah, that's the worst. It tells you nothing about the actual value of the experience.
And I think...
It's any version of like word of mouth, essentially. Like even if it's writing that just kind of takes the form of here's the experience I had with this game and
game is sweet. And I think podcasts, at least podcasts that aren't review focused, probably end up having a higher percentage of that just because no matter what format a podcast takes,
it's a discussion.
It's a bunch of people just talking about games.
And
so
there's an interesting phenomenon where I think actually Karen Gillan has talked about this, especially with
the new games journalism.
I think that kind of experiential review writing has been more common in UK press. Certainly. I mean, Eurogamer has its fair share of kind of traditional game reviews, but it also, you're more likely on that site to find a review that actually talks about the experience of the game and some interesting observation about it and a story from within it. You're probably never going to see that on an equally major North American game site. And Karen Gillan pointed this out at one point and said, you know, then the US press realized like they can get on a podcast and talk about that and people will still actually listen to it and enjoy it, even though it has nothing to do with the format of review that we've for some reason been grown up to think is the right way to do it.
Right.
And so you have this weird situation where people seem to be in denial.
Kind of like high school book report version of a video game review.
There's this weird, strange double standard where it's like when you write something in text, you're still expected to do it in this really stupid way, even though it's quite clear that people actually enjoy when you get there and just talk about what the game is actually like.
Right.
I don't really understand why.
Well, I think the stupidest part about that is that I suspect that even people listen to game podcasts, but if those same people went back to their magazine and wrote a review in the style of that podcast, they'd have a bunch of complete idiots writing and be like, what is this?
Yeah, right. That's probably true, yeah.
Which is depressing.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember, Computer Gaming World, which in its day had one of the most respected, hilarious, awesome game podcasts around, they tried to do the no scored reviews thing, and it was just
that's right when they changed to Games for Windows Magazine,
right?
Yeah,
that was right before that, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And yeah,
I mean, do you think that not having
crap all over it?
Where are my scores?
Well, I mean, do you think that that style of review is necessarily antithetical to having a score attached to it?
No, I don't. But I think that the way people think about scores in the context of games has become very technical. Yeah. You know, you can have really interesting film reviews that are starred, but yeah, don't suffer from that problem.
Yeah.
Because the star is nothing more than, overall, this is about where I'd put this relative to other things. It's right. Not based on all these technical factors and all yeah. of this, like, competence in different areas.
Yeah, which is what I would love to see. I mean, yeah, I think the granularity of game reviews needs to be reduced, you know? Like, I want to see 5-star or ABCD, F reviews.
There are
reviews.
Certainly sites with that.
I know, but I mean, like, it's not the standard. You know, Metacritic is still, you know,
100 points.
X point Y.
Yeah, Metacritic yeah. will turn your stars into a 2-digit number.
Yeah, there. Whereas, you know, where it is just like, yeah, here's my experience with this game and why it resonated with me or not, and why I think you might find it interesting. And that's kind of a 4-star game for me.
Yeah.
So have at it is like way more useful to me than, yeah, going down the bullet list and then saying it's an 8.5, you know?
Yeah. I agree. There's also an interesting, I don't know, someone on the site Cast Medium.
I've seen
they
that.
Post about podcasts. They post about our podcasts.
I've seen that
and some other ones. Yeah, and there was someone. This guy's going to feel embarrassed that I'm calling him out, but there's this guy who commented in last week's thread about our episode from that week about my Assassin's Creed 2 comments. And you know, he seemed his
your Assassin's Creed.
My Assassin's Creed. He commented, and he was saying, you know, I don't. Chris doesn't seem to know what his opinion of this game even is, and like, what is he trying to even say about this? And it was interesting. It was an interesting comment. And I actually replied to the guy because it did make me think about what I'd said about that game. And my conclusion was, I'm at this point, outside of games that really just I just adore and really just want to champion and promote, I've kind of lost all interest. I don't even know if I ever had much interest in it, but I've lost complete interest in trying to actually like judge games on a quality level. Like, what I was never even thinking about very much sort of my total opinion of Assassin's Creed 2 when I was talking about it. It was entirely just, these are some things that happened to me in the game, and this is like my memory of playing that game, and this is what I thought about these particular things. And it was interesting to me that someone tried to distill that into like a, you know, judgment, like a sort of complete judgment on the game, or at least even vague judgment on the game, because I don't really have one. Like, I still don't really know.
You're saying it's
if that's
a rental.
Like a great game or a good game or a bad game or what.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, I feel kind of the same way. Like, they're either games that I really connect with and yeah. I care about, and I want to talk about why I connect with them that way, or they just don't strike a chord with me. And I'm like, right. It's a game, or maybe it seemed really bad. You know, but like,
yeah.
But
at the far end of the scale.
Yeah, yeah. But like, it's either like there's sort of this tipping point of like, okay, I really got into this and I got why it was interesting and here's why I think that is. You should check it out. Or just, yeah, I don't know. I didn't really dig it that much. It's just sort of a thing. You know, it's probably fine. You know, like, you know, and it's sort of when you get past that point of it mattering to you, there's kind of a question of why even talk about it.
Right.
And the answer in a lot of sites is because you're, job there is to review every game,
of course,
so you have
yeah.
to do that.
Yeah.
But
I mean, yeah. I have the luxury that I've never worked for a review site, so I've never really had to deal with that.
Yeah, and it makes so. Yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's sort of the difference. Like when you were talking about Eurogamer or something,
yeah.
How some reviews have a different tone about them. Maybe it's like the ones that really connected with the reviewer have more of a personal tone. And then when it's sort of like, this is a 7.0.
No, I mean, that's certainly true. It's even true for me. You know, like I was struggling to think of interesting things to say about Singularity. Not because it's a terrible game. Like I played all the way to the end of it. So I clearly enjoyed myself to some extent.
Yeah.
And there are definitely good things about that game. But, you know, it never really like connected with me in a way that makes me like exuberant to discuss stories that happened in it or
yeah.
like interesting things, because it just wasn't that kind of experience for me personally,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I guess that can be interpreted as our judgments. Like certainly the number of stories we told about Far Cry 2, you could probably graph that like on a fucking
chart.
So it's
like a 7.8.
And like Metacritic could like interpret that as some kind of score.
Yeah.
But yeah.
As a goatee, as some sort of
goatee.
Yeah. But that was a goatee.
It would break the scale, Far Cry 2. You'd have to like, I mean, if
thanks
you
for saying it again,
if you did that on a bell curve, you know what I mean? Like if you did the thing that they do in college where it's like the one that did the best, that's 100%. And then the number of stories told about all the other games, like basically Far Cry 2 would get an A+ and all the other games would get a D.
Right.
So Far Cry 2 would fuck up the scale for everyone else. Yeah.
Far Cry 2 would probably actually be cut for being an outlier, but
that's true. Yeah. It wouldn't participate in the curve. Anyway, that's probably all the mail.
Is that all the mail?
Well, we're going to play some voicemails from 5-5 Wizard on now.
Do you just cut out whenever Jake does that?
No, I just don't do it.
Let's do it this time.
It's not happening.
Well, 5-5 Wizard on. Let's just get the voicemails out there.
All right. You can call it if you want. We probably won't listen to it, but you can call 5-5 Wizard on.
I've been listening to them. You don't check those anymore?
Do you?
No, I don't.
All right. So I'm going to call it.
Right now,
Steve, don't do that.
It's not.
Wizard on. What happens?
I've stolen your phone.
Yeah.
Anyway,
what are we actually going to do now?
We're
going to
end this podcast.
And before we end it,
wait. Did that have a clever meaning, Jake?
It has a bit
of
meaning.
A double meaning.
This might be the second or possibly third last episode of the Idle Thumbs podcast, because I have accepted a job on the other side of the country and will be moving from San Francisco in a few weeks.
And by he means me and Jake as well. We're all going! We're doing the podcast together!
No. Steve and I are going to stay here.
Chris is moving and we're staying here.
Yeah.
And Chris is, in fact, taking all of the microphones and mixing board with him.
Right. Well, if you guys wanted to keep doing a podcast, I'd be happy to leave you with some mics.
I don't want this shit.
You don't want to say that in front of the readers.
Yeah, so the podcast is going to effectively end in a couple of weeks, unfortunately.
And then Steve and I are going to announce one, and then Steve's going to get a job.
Are we just going to keep making that joke?
In Florida.
I'm never going back to Florida.
Oh, yeah. But you should, anyway, though, just so we can crush people's hopes a third time.
I've already got a job.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Sorry. Making video games. Living the dream.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I mean, can you even say that you're going?
I can't say where I'm going.
Yep, I mean, you're going to be working in.
I'll be working at a game
in the industry at a studio.
Can say
that.
So we can say congrats, Chris. Fuck Chris, and it's okay.
Feel free.
Okay. Congrats, Chris. Fuck Chris.
Good work.
Yeah.
So welcome to the video games industry.
Thanks.
In a couple weeks.
Yeah. So we'll have one or two more episodes of the Idle Thumbs podcast, and then we'll have the Idle Thumbs 51 at PAX.
The final for real shebang.
And that will be probably the last Idle Thumbs podcast content.
Unless we do GDC episodes or something.
Yeah, retirement. Come back from retirement for a con.
A reunion tour.
Yeah.
When everybody's back in town for GDC.
Right.
We will, in fact, tour a hotel room.
Yes.
Yeah. One tour stop.
One stop tour.
One stop tour.
One tour stop tour.
I guess one tour for the stop. Anyway, bye.
Idle Thumbs.
Video games.
We talk about an animated color cycling animation of
an eyeball.
Of ants spewing out a dog and man's eyeball sockets.
I don't know how you could do that with color cycling, but I bet you could. Either.
No.
There are wizards that...
You could do it the way that, like...
Wizards of the Coast,
like, signs that are just made up of little light bulbs.
Right.
Or for the ants just like...
Awful.
I love it.
I do too.
That's what I want the Photoshop poster for this episode to be. Is
to be an animated
the victory
Photoshop
screen of
poster.
Sim Ant, but just with ants pouring out of their eyes and mouth.
That should be the image.
That's the third step. You take over the yard, then you take over the house, then you take over the inside of the human living in the house.
Yeah.
Then
you took our system from Sim Life and modeled it with some ants.
NOM in exchange for Vietnam just amused me horribly. Like, if someone posts an old meme, it could be a Nom flashback.
Oh my god.
Christ.
That was the worst thing that's ever been said inside my apartment.
I know. Put that up and
it's official now.
Ruin my
life. It's real forever.
Sorry.
Episode 11, Nom flashback.
We could put a little. That could happen. We could put a little lolcat as the picture and have the description say all your base belong to this episode of Idle Thumbs.
Of the Idle Thumbs podcast.
Of this Idle Thumbs podcast.
Of Tet Idle Thumbs podcast.
Oh, Jesus.
Do you guys remember Jeff K? Remember how that guy was on the internet?
Oh, my God.
Man, he said Tet all the time.
He would say Zor.
That's true. He did say Zor. It's so classic.
Jake just almost snorted up some tea because of Zor.
Because of Zor. Classic Zor.
Steve, you used to say Zor a lot more than you do now.
Did I?
Yeah.
Do I now?
You don't say. I don't. I haven't seen you say Zor in like a year or two.
I guess it's a sign of the times.
Yeah, you're getting with it.
I guess Zor is just finally played out.
Stephen Gainzor.
More like Stephen Gayzor.
Oh, I was thinking about calling this episode Diplomatic Pouch, by the way. I hope that's okay.
That's fine with me. That phrase cracks me up for no good reason.
It's hilarious.
It's such a stupid sounding thing. It's really funny.
Yeah, it just sounds like Mad Libs. Yeah. It just sounds...
Diplomatic Pouch.
A diplomatic pouch.
Those words don't go together.
Fit at all.
Oh, it sounds like you've been watching The X-Files.